Hi, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that little Beyoncé break. I know we definitely did here in the studio.
I love Beyoncé so much. That's actually my favorite Beyoncé song.
I agree. It's really a bop for the ages.
Amanda, what is your favorite Beyoncé song?
I literally forgot the name. I'm just going to say Crazy in Love. Go with that.
Okay.
That's not a wrong
answer.
Is that
not? Oh, I thought you were going to say it's not a Beyoncé song.
Oh, no.
It's like, oh, no.
There's no wrong answer.
When Hold up.
What's your favorite Beyoncé song?
Hold up.
That one.
Okay, so a little bit about pop culture right now. So actually, when we were off air, we were just talking about Kehlani, the first song. So Scandal, Kehlani is having a baby.
Mm-hmm. I am so excited. I shrieked audibly when I saw the Instagram post.
I got sent it by so many people. I think both of you sent it to me, actually.
How do you know what you're like as a person? Can more than one people send you the same meme?
Yeah. It just feels like every celebrity is having a baby or had a baby.
Yeah, that's the in thing now.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like because the celebrities that are more relevant to us are at an age where getting pregnant and having babies is like a thing now? Like when you're 12, you're like, well.
Fair. Yeah. True. I guess people are always having babies.
That, I feel like the celebrities that like have been the biggest part of our lives are generally at least like a decade older than us. In that range, so yeah, it would make sense to be now.
Yeah, that's quite fair. So talking about celebrities that have had plenty of rumors about having babies or getting married or being engaged, Ariana Grande.
A woman.
Yeah. A woman. That girlfriend's gone through a lot this year and last year and always.
The world just will not give her a break.
Yeah.
And she will not rest. She'll keep putting out bops in spite of all these.
She is handling it in strides.
I don't know how she does it.
No.
Like, I can barely handle being a student. And she's handling real issues in this world. Amazing.
I'm, like, mildly inconvenienced. I'm like, I can't. She, like, has this super dramatic year with Mac passing and then breaking up with Pete. And she just keeps pumping out bops.
And so quick.
So fast. Yeah.
And not spiteful bops, not angry songs. Like, she is ready to take on the world. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, what a girl. So, her new song, Thank You Next, has dethroned Girls Like You after nearly 8 weeks at number one and has scored her first number one single, I believe that's what I've heard.
Really?
Get it.
I was very surprised to hear that she never had a number one.
Yeah, I don't know if
they're all number ones to me, Ariana, don't worry.
Number one in my heart, always.
Also surprised.
I would have never thought.
Yeah. Hey, actually, I disagree. Another pregnant celebrity that I love.
Fair, sorry, I'll back off.
How dare you come? Yeah, Cardi, that's a whole other controversial
Someone thing. Called it the nice for what for white people, and I've never been able to shake that ever since I saw it. Like, even the video, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
That caught me off guard, but it's not wrong.
Well, I'm glad it's not number one anymore.
Yeah.
That's the point.
That's fascinating. So for those of you that haven't heard Thank You Next, it's kind of an anthem about her exes. She touches on a lot of her past loves, including, obviously, Pete, Mac, Big Sean.
And this Ricky character.
I think he was one of her background dancers.
Yes. Mm. So she really does that, but not in, like, a super petty way.
No.
Yeah.
No, and she was talking about On to the Next. I was like, T. And then she's like, it's me. And I'm like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
But I'm still here for it.
Yeah. Everyone heard her say, like, Ari, and they were like, Aubrey, Drake? Everyone just wilding out for, like, no reason.
Everyone getting crazy about something that isn't real.
Yeah. Definitely a song about self-love and just moving on to bigger and better things. And I think that's pretty awesome for her. So we're going to play you a bit of it just for you to listen to. And you know, if you are enjoying what you're hearing, comment on the Facebook page for Radio Laurier.
Thought I'd end up with Sean, but it wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky.
What a bop. That song was great.
We were all dancing here in the studio. Not that you know that, but you ought to.
Yeah, Amanda censored herself.
Yeah, I didn't know what was appropriate. Not that anyone could hear it.
Sorry if anyone was offended.
So, now we're on to the interview portion of our show today. Ooh. So, please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hi, my name is Amanda DaCosta. I live with Ashley.
Alrighty.
Those are the highlights.
Tell me a bit about yourself, your education, where you grew up.
Okay, so I just graduated from Waterloo a couple weeks ago with a psych degree and a minor in sexuality, marriage, and families. I grew up in, kind of bounced around a lot. My mom flipped houses. And so I lived in the GTA for a while and then lived in Brantford for my high school years. So those were kind of like the formative big ones. So I say I'm from Brantford, but now I live here. My mom lives out here. And so I'm a Waterloo person now. It's a KW region.
Yeah, great roommates.
Yes, great roommates. Stuck with them.
So what led you to sexuality and family studies?
So initially when I was, nobody ever says this, but grade 10 careers really set me on a path. That class told me what I wanted. I knew what I wanted from then on, where I wanted to go. I wanted to be a counselor or a psychologist, and so I applied to Waterloo for psych. But I found that a lot of the courses weren't specific enough in the areas that I wanted to go into, and that was like working with either couples or youths, but more specific than just like learning about like brain science and like social experiments and stuff like that. So SMF was a lot more targeted at that. Like they had sex therapy courses, they had like courses on like the impact of divorce, way more broad and specific than what psychology was offering. And I think a really underrated program for the benefits of it, but yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
What is something that you could tell us about your program that maybe your average person wouldn't really be able to know just on their own? Like something that you...
Sure. I think a lot of people think psych is like interesting because, I don't know, stuff like people always think like I can analyze them now and like oh, you can tell if I'm lying and stuff like that. Which is honestly, I think a big part of psych is not being able to analyze people and like break them down into like diagnoses, which is a lot of people think that's what it is, and a lot of like some of my classmates would feel like they can diagnose people, but I think it's a lot more important just being like attentive and attentive of and being aware and like being able to empathize with people. And I think that's a big part of psychology that's kind of overlooked, which is why I didn't like the psych program so much, because it was more like the clinical side, I guess, versus the parts where it's like being able to understand people is key in the program.
Yeah. What kind of course titles did you have? I know oftentimes here at Laurier we have a lot of like interesting long course titles. I know UW is just down the street, but you're a completely different school. What's like one of the most interesting or like unique or strange course titles you've had, and how did the kind of course stand up to the title that it had?
In SMF I had a course called Anti-Oppressive Practices, which was so cool, and I had no idea what I was going into. Anti-oppressive practices and systematic therapy. Really long, and I never really looked into it beforehand, but it essentially was how to counsel people of different demographics that might not fit in with yours, and like how to better understand people. And like a huge part of the class was understanding your privilege, and we did a lot of like activities on that. So I think that was one of the courses that was like really specific. I don't know if it's specific to Waterloo, but it was like a really specific course name that I don't know if you get many other places.
Yeah.
That's what's coming to mind right now for
that. That's super applicable though, like with the big refugee population in Kitchener-Waterloo, like they have a whole different set of needs. I can imagine that we really can't even imagine, honestly. So learning how to help these people where they need it is huge. And
Our prof really harped on like, as a counselor, you're going to witness issues you never understood, and then it's your job to become an advocate for those people. And like, she thinks all counselors and like psychologists or whatever should be involved in some type of organization that actually like helps people that aren't necessarily your people. makes sense. Yeah, that was cool.
That's really neat. Would you say that this course helped you figure out anything of your identity, or that being a part of psych or sexuality and family studies helped you to, like, analyze parts of yourself that you potentially hadn't really seen prior to university?
That course actually specifically was a huge, so I took it in my first semester of third year, and that was a huge breaking point in me looking at my identity. So one of the activities we did was looking at privilege, and like we had to like, so I think we lined up, and then you had to take a step forward or two steps forward if you had this certain like privilege about you. And then at the end, you'd look back and see like where the rest of your classmates are, or look forward and see where everyone is. So it'd be things like, are you white? Do you have a, are you both parents together? The fact that you're in university right now, like that's an advantage. And I think a lot of the, it was all females in this class. I think a lot of them felt like they didn't have privilege and they didn't realize that. But I know for me, that activity pointed out like I had way more privilege than I thought I did. So I was raised by, so I'm white. Like if you look at me, I'm white, but I was raised by a black woman. My mom's black. My dad's Portuguese. and they're separated, and oh, I'm going to close the window. It's snowing on me. and we moved a lot. So like it put me in a lot of different, demographics. So up until like I was like 11, all my friends were diverse. Like I didn't really have any white friends before then. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Brantford, like majority of my friends were Dutch. And so doing that activity, I had to look at different areas of my life to see where I had privilege. Like my extended family, I'm one of the few that have gone to post-secondary, but then like my university friends, I mean, we're all in a completely different like level because we're all in university together. Just like it was interesting to take a step back and realize how your privilege and like how it can change so easily from setting to setting. Wow. And so it was the first time also where I was like, I don't actually know what race I am, because I kind of always just put like other when I fill out documents like government things. So it was this class, I worked on a project with a group of girls, two of which were mixed, one of which was white, and our project was on racism and pointing out people's like inherent perceptions of people of different races. That's really long to explain, but it was a really cool project, and it was the first time that I had to like seriously figure out, like, you don't have to, because my brother doesn't care what race he is. He doesn't. He's Trinidadian, Kenyan, and English, and he's a visible minority, but he doesn't care what he is, and if you ask him what it is he is, he says he's Canadian. So you don't have to figure it out, but it was the first time where I wanted to, and I had a lot of different responses. One of the girls in my group who is mixed said, you can be whatever you want to be, which was the first time I'd ever heard that, because like growing up it was always people would decide for me, you know, if someone felt they were being racist or I called them out, they'd be like, I can't be racist, I'm friends with you. Or if I would call someone out for like something else, they'd be like, oh, it doesn't matter, you're white. Anyways, I'm rambling now, but that class was the first time I had to like, I was able to really address and work through what I saw myself as and what other people saw me as, and just kind of the big coming to terms. It was a great course. Yeah. I would highly recommend it for any UW student, or if other students can take it somehow, then yeah, shout out to Carm.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember the first summer I knew you, I met Amanda working at together at a summer camp, and you were an inclusion counselor, so you helped a lot of campers, and I just knew you as this like super awesome coworker, this fun person to hang out with on the weekends. And I remember one weekend your mom picked you up, and I was like, her mom looks like me. I'm like mixed, my mom's white, my dad's black. And I remember like being like, I knew Amanda was Portuguese, but I my mom was like, oh, sometimes Portuguese people are really tanned, and I just accepted that, like I didn't even question it, because I was like, my mom fair. Must be right, but no. But yeah, it's just interesting, like, knowing you in that context, and then, like, seeing more of your life outside of it has been really, really fascinating, and, like, learning what you're interested in. Yeah, so can you talk to some of your experiences working as a summer camp counselor?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And also, I want to say that summer was right before I took that course, and so you were also a big part of me figuring that out as well, because, like, we had a new friendship, and, like, all my friends, stop. Most of my friends in the first 2 years of university were white. And so, like, it was kind of like, I don't know, you were a nice segue into that for me. Yeah, camp. Experience as a camp counselor that have just, like, just, I think camp is one of the most underrated jobs ever. It prepares you for so much. Like, I could have, like, 12 kids. I'm ready. Camp did that for me. I know I can handle it now because I'm taking care of 12 kids on my own. I know it's harder than that to be a parent. But, yeah, more specifically.
Yeah, what is your funniest camp memory?
Funny? Oh, no. That would take, I could come up with a million. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, don't use names.
Don't use names.
But describe what type of camper was your favorite type to have.
Favorite type?
Oh, yeah. Because you had a lot of, like, different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you had so many different types of campers, mm-hmm. and as an inclusion counselor. So if you want to explain what an inclusion counselor is to listeners. Yeah.
First off, the camp we worked at, every week was a different, like, group of kids. So, like, throughout the summer, you could work with 5-year-olds to 30-year-olds. With ranging abilities. Some weeks we had basketball camp, so that was, like, a specific type of kid, and, like, 12 to 18. And then we'd have weeks where it was, like, young adults with special needs. So, like, changed every week. Favorite types of campers? Oh, an inclusion camper, or inclusion counselor. So we also had a specific program that worked with, would pair up counselors with kids with, I guess, exceptionalities. So that could be, like, physical, it could be behavioral, it could be developmental, it could be a mental illness. And so I wasn't hired as an inclusion counselor, but I very quickly was given that, quickly given, partnered with kids with specific needs. But, so the best kind of campers were the ones that were, like, super mature and, like, would, like, partner with you, and, like, you could count on them to always know what was going on and, like, help out with the other kids. But I think the best campers were the most, looking back, not at the time, the most challenging ones. So, like, my very, very first week of camp, I was partnered with a support staff, which is somebody who has another role program at camp. So I was partnered with the craft director. So she had so many other things she was supposed to be doing. So it was really just me on my own with the kids. Mm-hmm. And I had two inclusion campers, so that's two kids you're supposed to keep an eye on specifically, and then one who should have been. And one of the girls I had was the hardest human being I've ever in my entire life been around. I cried multiple times that week. She needed so much love because she was so, I guess, angry. I don't even know what it was, but she just would constantly refuse to do anything you asked her. Mm-hmm. Always would do the opposite, and she would hit, and she every staff member who's had her knows exactly, like, oh yeah, that girl, like, that was the hardest week of my life. Like, my first tattoo I thought of that week because I needed something to remind me that I'm stronger than I think I am, because it was just, and, like, she's, I think, stands out the most because she was my first camper, and I did it really on my own, it felt like. But, like, the campers that each week really challenged me, and, like, you have to learn how to love kids for being kids, not because it's really easy to love the campers that were, like, super helpful, and mm-hmm. that would be, like, especially your older campers that are, like, oh, I want to be a counselor too, so I'm going to help out with everything. It's really easy to love those kids, but kids who have been through some really dark things at really young ages that haven't experienced a lot of love outside of this week. And so many times at the end of the week, they're like, this has been the best 5 days of my entire life. And you're thinking, how? Like, I was short-tempered with you. I was like, sometimes I avoided you. But, like, it was still the best week of their lives. And, like, campers that, like, show you, teach you how to love and be patient in ways you didn't think you could are, like, the best ones. Looking back. Not in those weeks. Those weeks are so hard.
And keep in mind, this is overnight camp, like, sleepaway camp.
Yeah, it's so not, it's like, a 9-to-5 job. This is, like, a 24-hour week. These kids are waking you up in the middle of the night, screaming and having to pee. And, like,
I don't even want to wake up when I have to pee in the middle of the night. Yeah.
Learn to sleep through it, kiddo.
Yeah. Then you have to deal with it in the morning and they wet the bed, so.
I never had to deal with that once.
Really?
I lucked out.
Man.
Never once had a kid wet the bed.
I always had leaders in training after my first year. So, like, they always learned the process at a different...
That's good.
Yeah. I was a really great mentor. Yeah, it sounds like camp was really wonderful and really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have any stories from campouts or, like, any things that stood out about your campout experiences?
Yeah. So campouts once a week, not for every camp. There's, I think, 4 weeks of the summer that we do campouts. And so you and your cabin pack up a bunch of food and, like, tents and, like, all the supplies. And you go off into the woods and you set up camp for the night. And these can be, I was very lucky I never had to come back, but I know some people just had nightmare nights that, like, they had to trudge back in the rain, somebody's covered in poop, just, like, nightmares. I was very lucky, but I know there was one week where, we had a camper start sleepwalking, and so we decided that night. This was the older kids, so they were, like, 15, I think. And we decided not to sleep in the tents, and we set up tarps, and we were all laying out under the stars. And we were starting to fall asleep. And one of the girls, like, nudged me and one of my co-counselors and was, like, I can't remember this girl's name, but Jessica or whatever. I think she's sleepwalking, and we roll over, and she's standing up in the middle of the tarp. And we're in, like, this – we're in, like, a field. It's night. And we're in a field that's surrounded by forest, and she's just staring out into the field. And all the girls are starting to, like, inch away from her on the mat because they're afraid. And my co is like, I can't do this. This is terrifying. This is like a horror movie. And so, like, I get up and I'm like, ah, Jessica, are you okay? And she, like, turns and faces me with her eyes closed. And then she just starts crying, and she goes, Mommy, and she's crying, and I'm like, oh, this is literally a horror movie. This is not okay. And everyone's like, don't touch her, because I guess if you touch someone who's sleepwalking, they could, like, either hit you or, like, I don't know, have a heart attack or something not good. And so, like, I end up, like, talking her down in her sleep to lay back down, but at that point, all the other campers are like, get this girl away from me. So we ended up sandwiching her between the counselors, and then she just started, we're like, put her between us, and then she starts doing things like giggling and speaking in different languages and, like, humming, and eventually she gets up and runs off into the woods, and we end up getting another staff member to get her. It was just, like, it was out of a horror movie. It was terrifying, but... Again, teaches you.
Honestly, if someone tuned in right there, you would think you're just talking about the plot of a film. But, like,
yes, yeah. The Conjuring.
Yeah. And then we put her in a tent for the rest of the night, and she was fine. But it's pretty traumatic. She didn't remember any of it the next morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
my friend's little brother does that, and, like, you'll wake up and he's, like, right in your face, and you're like, "This is terrifying. Please go away." But
I mean, how do you?
It's crazy how that human bodies are wild.
Well, sleep is wild. I think we don't know enough about it as, like, scientists or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I know I never learned about it in psych, but, like, what are dreams? What is...
Yeah. What's one thing that you wish you knew more about?
Just in the world?
Just in the world. Like, something general.
Ooh.
Because, like, for me, it's dreams.
Yeah. No, I was thinking that, too. Yeah. Like, I wish I knew how to interpret dreams. But, like, I don't know if it's just your brain, like, exploding everything from the day. Something... I wish I knew more about history.
Yeah.
Just in general, all of it. I wish I knew more about history. Yeah. I wish I could spout out more facts about things that have happened in the world.
Yeah.
It's so important, too, because, like, so many things are the way they are now because of certain, like, historical things that happened. So it's hard to really understand what's going on without having the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally agree with you. Like, I think.
Yeah. Or, and things, like, repeat themselves, regions, too.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound, like, mad dumb because, like, I'm a black woman, but, like, there were so many things I did not understand about, like, my history because of, like, the way that history is taught in class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
that's
for me,
true.
It was, like, okay, black people just existed in the Caribbean, and, like, my grandmother's from Guyana because, like, that's just how it's always been. Like, it took me till way too late in the game to realize that, like, the Caribbean was colonized, like, that is, like, to understand the migration of people, like, it took me a lot longer because of the way that we teach history. Like, we don't teach history as in, like, this migration story as much. It's just like, okay, so this is when it starts to matter. Like, Columbus lands here. Yeah. Like, it begins in 1942. Like, it's like 1942.
1942 it all began.
Yeah.
All during World War II. Yeah. <Ooh.
laughs> But, like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like even my understanding of my lineage changed when I started to actually challenge these things, or, like, the idea I could go on for days about things that I didn't know until school and things that I still don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, my Google and searches are embarrassing.
And I feel like Western, like, education and media in general just, like, neglects entire parts of the world. And I
so
just feel
much,
like, like, Africa, I know that's, like, very broad, but as a whole, they get misrepresented or not represented at all frequently. And I think Latin America and also the Middle East, we have, like, these gross misconceptions of what's going on, or none at all, and I think that's
wrong. Truly. There's so many things, like, I think we all have, like, an image of what Africa looks like in our head because of what we've been taught, but
yeah, it's like Angelina Jolie with a bunch of, like, disadvantaged
and
children,
that's
that's so problematic.
Not right, and I think, like, growing up, too, like, my mom was adopted, so we don't know much about her family. We've done a little bit of research, but, like, her dad was from Kenya. And I think in my mind, I always just imagined, like, this doesn't sound horrible, but, like, he lived in a hut and then by some chance got to come to Canada. But, like, he was in Canada to become a doctor. Like, he wasn't...
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I still don't know anything about Kenya, but, like, I definitely have the wrong perception of what Africa is.
Yeah. I mean, the images were fed are just so...
I think
dismissive.
It's almost like a tactic of NGOs, too, because we won't, like, give any money or care if people... seem to be prospering without our help kind of thing. So I think it's kind of, there are, like, several levels of why it is the way it is in our minds, but so even from people with what we would consider to be good intentions are feeding us things that may or may not be true. So crazy.
No, that's true. I have a relative who, I won't share too much information, but they make commercials for NGOs. And some of the tactics they use to make things look worse than they are, like, for, like, the animal commercials, it's not animals who are neglected, it's animals who, it's videos of animals who are coming out of anesthesia. So, like, they're not sad, they're high. And things like that, or, like, I don't know, there's other ones. But, like, things they do to, they need money, but, you know, it's easy to manipulate people that are giving.
It's kind of exploitative almost.
Which statistically is all 67-year-old white women. That's their market.
Interesting.
Yeah, those are the people that donate.
It makes sense. I mean, you would think, like, retired or soon to be retired, disposable income.
Man, I can't wait to retire and I haven't even done anything.
Haven't even graduated. Banking on retirement.
Yep.
Me too.
So... what is a piece of news that has caught your eye recently? It can be pop culture related. It can be, like, an article you've read. It can be something that you've seen, a tweet, anything that has, like, caught your eye. It could make you laugh, could make you cry, could make you want to punch a wall. What's going on? What's really caught you off guard?
Caught me off guard. I want to say quickly to something Taryn said. Okay. And then I will say something that's less significant, but I wanted to point this out. You mentioned Beto. Apparently, he's the likely candidate for our next president, the next American president. Not ours. This isn't our politics. But that is something exciting in the news.
I have some goosebumps right now.
That's Beto pretty exciting.
Running for president. But
also what you said about not our president, that impacts us greatly.
It really does.
And it's very fair to it's fair to care. I mean... Yeah,
I think it's just ignorant to not care about what's
That's
going
true.
On with other people, like, regardless if it has a direct impact on your personal life or not. But I think for the sake of humanity,
it's
good enough reason
to care.
Yeah.
Beto!
But also something that's impacting me is a question that was posed earlier, and if Post Malone or Justin Bieber smells worse. Because neither of them are really...
It's a tough competition, right?
I love them both. I will say that.
Do you think they both smell? Like, because some people say, like, I don't... Because everyone talks about Post Malone. And, I mean, he looks like a smelly dude. you know?
He got a haircut, though.
He
got a haircut, yeah. Which is off-putting, because, like, you still got tattoos all over your face. Like, yeah. You kind of committed
like
to
how
a look.
Much off? But like,
it's,
all
like,
of it?
Short. It's, like, it's like, I don't know. See what I'm doing with my hands. It's shorter.
He's cute in a weird way. Like, he's kind of adorable.
Yeah.
You have to admit. Yeah.
My coworker this summer was like, obsessed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both are incredibly impressive young men, but I don't think either of them can achieve the looks they have without smelling. If that's fair. Yeah, I don't see how they couldn't.
That's fair. I mean,
especially because when you think of Justin in like the before times, he looked like literally so clean.
Mm-hmm.
Like
squeaky.
Clean.
Yeah.
Like
he used to smell like
I'm thinking
like
of
so
his pictures in my mind
definitely.
And I'm like, that is just clean.
Well, and he's popping out colognes or perfumes left and right.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. In high school.
Ugh.
Yeah, but now I don't know. But I also don't understand how you could be with Hailey Baldwin, who is like beyond
gorgeous.
Yeah,
she's not going to let him be slipping too far, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's just cuz like does he bleach he must bleach his hair to be that
blonde,
right?
He's
got to
bleach his hair, yeah.
And when I had bleached hair, like my hair would get really dry.
Mm.
And like so I would moisturize it a lot, mm-hmm. But maybe he just doesn't. Maybe.
Because his hair does look dry.
He just needs a nice black woman to educate him on the power of coconut oil, and he will no longer look like he smells. Maybe.
We should drop by his family's home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you live in this part of Ontario, you know where their family
My
lives.
My uncle knows where his dad throws his trash out. He lives in Stratford, so he want the info.
I have pictures in front of his grandparents' house, I'm not going to lie. I was walking by, casually, not knowing. And then I got a picture. And I think someone was watching me from inside the house.
It's probably Jay Beebs.
Probably.
But we still haven't really addressed this.
Which one smells
question.
Worse?
Which one is smellier? I guess we've, you know, tiptoed around the issue. I mean, the question.
I don't.
On the count of three, everyone
Malone
say their person.
Dress is better now.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Better now. That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
Then Justin. Okay, I don't know. Okay, count of three.
On the count of three, say who you think smells
Worse. Okay.
Worse. One, two, three. Justin Bieber.
Oh.
Did you both say Bieber?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That's
because
fair.
I think his is like, he's started at a certain point of cleanliness and he's descended into this. So like the perception
yeah.
of it.
I think he
Whereas
still
like,
smells
Post Malone has never,
plateau
people are
smell.
Ready for that. Like people
yeah.
who know him are like, mm,
I also
that's Post,
feel like
guy.
He's a cologne guy.
Yeah. I feel mm-hmm. like, yeah.
I feel like Post Malone is sweet and adorable, and the way he talks reminds me of one of my friends who's just so sweet, and I feel like he's really funny, and I feel like he probably is just trying. He was just trying a new hairstyle.
You know what? Yeah.
He's
also a Southern boy.
Yeah.
So I feel like he was, actually, I don't want to slander Justin Bieber's mom, but I feel like he was probably raised to be more proper. I don't know. I don't know anything about the States.
I mean,
I should just withdraw my opinion.
Southern hospitality is real. I mean, I feel like he, you know, slaps on some deodorant, but I feel like Justin Bieber has, like, that good, bad smell. Like, it's his pheromones.
The Southern Ontario hockey boy smell.
Yeah, like, I feel like he smells
He'd
like a hockey bag.
He'd be sending it at Boots if he wasn't famous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So I feel like it's not, I feel like neither of them smell that bad, because, you know.
That's true. Maybe they, neither of them smell at all.
Probably the person who smells the worst would be, like, the least, like, the most surprising to us, you know? It probably isn't even one of them. It's
probably, like, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Well, he's all about the environment, so he might use natural deodorant, which, like,
probably
I don't
know.
Probably
doesn't use water at all.
Don't roast natural deodorant. I went through a phase.
I don't think it's wrong. I'm just saying, like, you know the transition phase between using the two.
Yeah, where your body's adjusting.
Or he probably is just like, I'm Leonardo DiCaprio, so it really doesn't matter.
You're gonna
what anyone's
me
opinions
anyways.
Of me are.
Same. Except I'm not, so I should care. All right. So we have here with us, I know we only have 7 minutes left of our show, but we have 36 questions that lead to love. And here at the Happy Hour Report, we want you listeners to love us. Amanda, we want you to love us.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to love each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Be kind to one another. But, so we have 36 questions here. What
Can
I'm going to get you to do is you're going to pick
numbers
between 1 and
36.
And then I'm going to ask you a corresponding question.
Okay.
These are 36 questions that you can ask on a first date, and it should create intimacy and that which will later lead to love.
Okay.
So, I mean, let's send it.
Number 7.
Oh, this is dark. I'm going to go for it.
We're going right in. Okay. Diving right in.
Do you have a... I don't want to read this. It makes me sad.
Ask me, and then I'll just pick a new number like I never said seven.
Do you have a secret hunch about how you will die?
Oh my gosh.
That's not what I expected.
You know what? Anytime I think of that question, I stop thinking about that question because it's stressing me out. Because sometimes I feel like you can think things into existence. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Send the vibes out.
So I don't want to think about it.
Okay.
Would you say you're scared of dying? Like, not in, like, a freaky way, but, like, I feel like I'm not because I just feel like... believing in like something bigger that I don't feel particularly like, not that I'm out here trying to die or anything, but I don't feel like super spooked about
that's
death,
fair.
The way that some people like,
and I agree with that. I would say the same thing. I'm sad about not living my life to the fullest here.
Yes, me too.
That's what freaks me out more than like
not the
dying.
Death itself. Yeah, I agree.
Because like I believe in an afterlife, but like I also feel like I need to do some stuff here before.
Yeah,
I shouldn't just be chilling until I.
So. My hunch is that I'll die at, like, 92.
You're gonna be an old biddy.
That's too old. That's too much. We'll see. We'll see how my grandkids are.
What are my internal organs like? If they're good, I can,
so far they're can connect
to 92. We do them fine. Okay, can you pick another number between 1 and 36?
13.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay. If a crystal ball could tell you the truth about yourself, your life, the future, or anything else, what would you want to know?
How am I going to die?
Refer back to question 7.
Ooh. Did they say, can I ask about the past? No, I'm not going to dwell on the past. Doesn't matter.
It says anything else, so really you could ask.
The world is your oyster.
You know what? This is really lame, but I want to know who I marry. I just want to know so I can, you know.
Because then
process.
When you meet them or, like, when you figure it out, you'd be like, whoa. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Let's stop. I want to, like, know who it is, but also where they are right now so that I can speed up meeting them, too.
But what if they have, like, this whole...
development that they have to go through?
Yeah. Character development.
All right. I'd like to just know when so I can live it up now.
There so I can go. Tell my mom to get off my back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mom, you're not going to meet anyone before this person.
Yeah.
Mom, I looked into this crystal ball, so just hold on.
Trust. Don't worry, you're getting your grandkids. Okay, next number.
What's my last number? 36?
Yeah.
32.
Oh. Okay, so actually...
Is there no 32?
One moment.
Our questions might not be linear.
32. Oh, this is really controversial. You can pass. If you'd like, what, if anything, is too serious to be joked about?
Oh,
I feel like we talked.
We had a brief conversation about this because of Pete Davidson made a remark about a veteran on SNL and apologized. I feel like for comedians, there kind of isn't really an area they can't touch.
Mm-hmm. It's just for their personal.
Comedy is like controversial, and I really don't think. I don't know. There's some things that I know I don't want to watch comedians joke about. I think in, like, oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
Because I think in, like, daily life, you gotta learn to gauge your audience.
Yes.
And, like, who you're joking around with. Because some people just aren't comfortable with you. I, honestly, I don't really love being roasted. I know you love being roasted, Ashley.
Yeah, I do.
But, you know, it makes me sad getting roasted. No, sometimes it's okay. Light roasting's okay.
Yeah, I'm, like, fine with being roasted. I don't love roasting other women.
That's fair.
I feel like I
roast men are men. Open targets.
Go. I feel like I need to work on that, but I feel like it's just like the culture of masculinity that you have to be able to like give jabs and take jabs.
Yeah.
And like
that's fair.
I'm like I think there are boundaries in the real world. I agree with you about the comedy thing though. I think there's definitely boundaries that can be transgressed for
I
comedy.
I think read your audience, and also too soon is a legitimate thing. Like, don't joke about stuff that's, like, just happening.
Yeah.
Like, recent tragedies and, like, I don't know. You can joke about Abraham Lincoln now. Now it's fine.
But there's some tragedies that it will always be too soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Be nice.
Yeah, be
that's
kind.
That's just the major rule.
Well, it is nearly 6 o'clock, and so that means it's almost the end of the happy hour and happy hour report. So, what are some words you'd like to leave the audience with? What's something to live by or something to strive for?
There's always tomorrow.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
That's pretty beautiful.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about today. No, this is great, though.
You guys crushed it. Yeah. Well, that's it from us here at the Happy Hour Report. Tune in next week if you'd like to hear some more from us. And if anyone would like to chat with us and talk about kind of issues that are the news, diversity, equity, anything like that, feel free to hit us up. We'll be here every Tuesday, 5 p.m.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week.
Because